Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is May the 1st. It's also Rosh Chodesh Iyar. And we are on page 984 in Parshas Ekev. And we're beginning at the top of the page, Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, right? Verse 11. We did this first Pasuk last time, at the end of our class last time. We're going to do it one more, just to start with it, so we can get the flow for the where we're up to. So, the Pasuk says, 984, the Pasuk says, Hisham alecha pentishkach es Hashem elokecha. You should be careful not to forget Hashem. Livilti shmor mitzvosav v'mishpatav v'chukosav. Not to guard his mitzvos, his laws, his statutes. Asher anochi mitzavcha hayom. That I am commanding you today. Now, when we did this pasuk last time, we discussed the concept of forgetting Hashem and the various issues associated with that. But now, we're just going to continue and just conclude that in the paragraph we're about to read. So be careful not to forget Hashem. How would that happen? Pentochal v'savata, lest you eat and be satiated. Uvatim tovim tivne, and you build good houses, v'yashavta, and you will dwell. Uvekarcha v'tzoncha yir biyun, and your cattle and your sheep will increase. V'chesef v'zahav yirbelach, and silver and gold will increase for you. V'chol asher lecha yirben, everything you have will increase. And the result of that would be, v'rom levavecha, your heart will become haughty. V'shachachta es Hashem elokecha, you will forget Hashem, your God. Hamotziacha me'eretz Mitzrayim beis avadim, who takes you out of Mitzrayim from a house of servitude. So the Torah is describing the progression of forgetting Hashem. How does one forget Hashem? It primarily comes through affluence. And the Torah here describes the progression of the affluence. It begins with eating and being satiated, having enough food. We take, Baruch Hashem, we take having enough food for granted as something that is normal in the United States. In our culture, we take it for granted, which is a beautiful thing, a wonderful thing. It is has not always been so. And the fact that it is, we take it for granted, we don't know what it means, or we're not familiar with the Baruch Hashem, with what it means to not have enough food. But when people don't have enough food, so life becomes focused on getting food. That's what becomes the focus of life, becomes trying to be able to put bread on the table. That is, that becomes a very, very overwhelming focus of people when there is lack. I'm not talking about, God forbid, starvation. I'm just talking about not having enough to fill up. So then that becomes an overwhelming focus and something that people have to constantly be worried about. That worry, that fear, that anxiety prevents people from becoming arrogant, because it's this overwhelming need that everybody has. We all know we always have to eat. Eating is something which a person has to do every day, and there always has to be food, and whenever there is scarcity in that area, it prevents arrogance. Many of the Musar Sfarim speak about how the source of this is in Mishlei, in Proverbs, where the comparison between the risk of what is the greatest risk of Avera when there is scarcity, and what is the greatest risk of Avera when there is plenty. So when there is plenty, the greatest risk is arrogance, which is what we're reading about here. The greatest risk with scarcity is theft or lying, being deceitful, because everybody's trying to figure out how to get more. And that becomes the biggest problem. So if there is a lack, then the Yetzer Hara, it pushes a person to be dishonest. When there is an abundance, the Yetzer Hara pushes a person to be arrogant. And the very first place where plenty finds expression is with food, because that's the thing that people need every single day. The next thing is dwelling. First comes food. That's a person's first priority. And then comes, as it says in Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12, after it says, Pentochal v'savat, unless you eat and be satisfied, satiated, uvatim tovim tivne, and you'll build good houses, v'yashavta, and you will dwell. The issue here is not the size of the house or the beauty of the house. It's a good house. What does good mean? Well, good is going to depend on what each person wants out of a dwelling and what a person's culture wants out of a dwelling. That's irrelevant. The point is, it will be a dwelling that you and I will define as good. Once a person has a dwelling that we define as good, so then the risk of arrogance becomes greater. So we go from being satiated with food to having a dwelling that a person considers good. Now, you compare a good dwelling 200 years ago and today, it's going to look very, very different. Indoor plumbing, for example. Right? There's going to be electricity. There's going to be very big differences. But it doesn't matter, because all that matters is relative to where you are. That's what matters. Even in the world today, a quote-unquote good dwelling in Atlanta, Georgia, and a good dwelling in a country that is not as affluent as the United States is going to be different. But it doesn't matter, because relative to where you are and your culture, whatever is considered good is what matters. And that's the second step. The third step is wealth. And that's Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, having an abundance of cattle and sheep and silver and gold. All of that means there is an abundance that will take care of a person for a long period of time. Or a person feels that they are not worried about where their future income is coming from. That's the third step. So once all those things are taken care of, there's enough food, and there's no scarcity with food, number one. Number two, the dwelling is considered to be a good dwelling. A person doesn't feel that their dwelling is inadequate. It's adequate. It's doing what it needs to do. And then there is money in the bank. There's more there. Then we run the risk of Pasuk Yudal, verse 14, that a person becomes arrogant and forgets Hashem. Now, the truth of the matter is that it's an interesting phenomena that is what happens. It is what happens. I think we see it all the time. In our society, Baruch Hashem, scarcity is not so common and wealth is much more common. And therefore, we see the results of wealth, that people struggle with whether to submit to Hashem or not. What's interesting is that the Gemara tells us, the Mishnah says, marbe nechasem marbe daiga. Person increases possessions, they increase anxiety. The more one has, the more one has to lose. It's always the case. The more that one has, the more one has to lose. And we all know, deep down, that nothing is guaranteed and nothing is secure. Everything can be taken away, everything can disappear in a moment's notice. We all know that. But there's an illusion of security when we have more. And the more we have, the more that we get, we start to feel that we are in fact secure. The truth is that a person who is very, very, very wealthy actually is more worried about losing everything than a person who doesn't have that much. Even though you could argue a person doesn't have that much, if they lose just a little bit, they're going to be in crisis. Where the person who is very, very, very wealthy, it's going to take a lot to lose before they're in crisis. Still, the person who has a lot has more that they can lose, and therefore they are more concerned about it. they're actually more focused on what they have than a person who does not have that much. That's human nature. So if that's true, you would have thought that the person who has more to lose and is more worried about losing what they have would actually have a greater level of emuna, a greater level of connection to Hashem, because they know that they are dependent on Hashem to get to have what they have, that they shouldn't lose what they have. That's what should happen. If I have less to lose, I don't need to rely on Hashem so much, because what do I have to lose? If I have more to lose, I should have to rely on Hashem more. But that's not the way it works. The way it works is, the more I feel that I lack, the more I turn to Hashem. The more I feel that I don't lack, the less I turn to Hashem. Even though, the more I feel that I don't lack is then offset by the more I feel I have to lose. But for that, we don't turn to Hashem. That sense that I might lose what I have does not drive a person to Hashem. The fact that I need something drives a person to Hashem. And so, therefore, there is a risk of arrogance. There's a risk of saying, I don't need God. I have. I'm afraid of losing what I have. But for that fear of loss does not drive a person to Hashem. Even though loss aversion is considered to be a bigger motivation than gain, psychologically, studies apparently show that people are willing to risk more to avoid loss than they are to gain. It's the same amount of risk that it takes to gain, whatever it is, $1,000, let's just use that number, and that amount of risk that it would take not to lose $1,000, people might risk that not to lose $1,000, but won't risk it to gain $1,000. Evidently studies show that. So even though people are willing to risk more to avoid loss than they are to gain, but when we perceive that we need, then we turn to Hashem. When we perceive that we might lose, we're not driven to Hashem. A person, God forbid, is dealing with illness, so they need health. They turn to Hashem. Person is stricken with poverty, they need money, they need parnasa, they turn to Hashem. Person is stricken with any kind of issue that they need, they frequently will turn to Hashem. Person has whatever they need. They're comfortable. Everything they have. They have wealth. They have health. They have everything. Then they tend not to turn to Hashem, even though it is that they have much more than they can lose. There's that sense of, well, I have it. So they don't, even though they are definitely afraid of losing it, but they don't turn to Hashem for that. That's human nature. So therefore, the risk is arrogance. V'ram levavecha. Person will say that, well, person will his heart will become haughty. And now the pasuk, the Torah now will elaborate on this a little bit. And he will forget Hashem, who takes us out of the land of Egypt from the house of servitude. We'll forget that Hashem took us out. And let's keep reading. We'll see where this is going. Pasuk Tezvav, verse 15. Hamolichacha bamidbar hagadol v'hanora, the one who led you through this large and awesome wilderness, nachash, saraf, ve'akrav, various snakes and scorpions and other types of dangerous, poisonous animals, v'tzimaon, asher imayim, and a thirst where there was no water. So he took us through this area that really we could not have possibly survived. It was dangerous, and we did not have our basic needs. And yet, Hashem took us through there. We were protected. The one who takes out water for you from the stone. That Hashem took out water and made it that we had water to drink. The one who fed you man in the wilderness that your ancestors did not know. In order to afflict you and in order to test you. In order to give you good in your end. We discussed this already in the beginning of Parshas Ekev, that the man was both a test and it was an affliction, because there was no money in the bank. There was no food in the pantry. There was nothing in the freezer. The man was just what you had that day, and when you finished it, it was gone. That was it. Done. So Hashem took care of our every need, but the way He took care of our needs was not to give us an abundance so that we're taken care of. Person frequently says, you know, Hashem, please just make me comfortable. Make it that I don't have to worry about parnasa. Give me all my needs and I should feel comfortable. I should feel like I have what I need. I don't have to worry anymore about my parnasa. Person asks Hashem for that. But that's not what Hashem did for us in the wilderness. He did not make it that we had all of our parnasa and it was already there in the bank. Hashem gave it to us each day. We had everything we needed, but only for the day. And when that day was over, we had nothing. And then the next day He gave it to us again. There was not that sense of security. We were constantly turning to Hashem for more. So that's what happened in the Midbar. That's how Hashem took care of us there. But when everything increases, and we have food, and we have a dwelling, and we have money in the bank, what happens next? Pasuk Yedzayim, verse 17, a famous pasuk. V'amarta bilvavecha, you will say in your heart, Kochi v'otzem yadi asali esachayel hazeh, my strength, the power of my hand, made for me this wealth. I am a self-made man. I generated my wealth. I worked for it. I was clever. I figured it out. I had an idea. I made it work. And because of that, I'm wealthy. And that is very, very dangerous. V'zacharta es Hashem Elokecha, you must remember Hashem your God, ki hu hanosin lecha koach la'asos chayol, He is the one who gives you the strength to have wealth. L'man hakim es briso, asher nishba la'avosecha kayom hazeh, in order to establish His covenant that He swore to your ancestors as this day. The Torah is telling us that the way that a person is supposed to treat their affluence, and again, when I use the word affluence, I'm not talking relatively speaking. In our culture, we are all affluent if you compare us to previous cultures. The fact that a person, shouldn't say we're all, almost everybody, the fact that a person has food in the pantry and has food in the freezer and in the refrigerator, that is affluence. We may always say we want more. We may always say we feel like we're lacking, but we have much more than in previous generations. Even the fact that there's food on the shelves in the stores is a level of affluence. Food is available. A dwelling, roof over our heads, incredible luxuries, climate control, heat, air conditioning, indoor plumbing, indoor bathing, indoor clothes washing and drying. These things were unheard of in previous generations, plus forms of entertainment that we have, the ability to communicate with people who are not around us and carrying that ability to communicate around with us all the time. These things were unheard of in previous generations, a level of affluence that is unheard of. And what a person is supposed to remember is that Hashem is the one who provides all of that. And even though it does not appear that way, but the way we should be thinking about it is the way we had it in the Midbar. Meaning, when we all go to sleep tonight, and hopefully we're all going to go to sleep tonight, so when we are ready to go to sleep and we're saying Shema before we close our eyes, what we should think to ourselves is, Baruch Hashem, I have everything I needed today. Today I had everything I needed. I had food to eat. I had clothing to wear. I have a roof over my head. I have a bed to sleep in. I have a blanket. I have a pillow. I have clean clothing. I have air conditioning. I have everything that I need right now. There is no guarantee that I'm going to have all of that tomorrow. I have it now. I had it today because of Hashem's benevolence. There is no guarantee that it will all be there tomorrow. Tomorrow morning when I wake up and I say Moda Ani, the first thing I need to do is I need to daven. Why do I need to daven? Because I'm going to daven to Hashem that He give me everything that I had today, He should give me tomorrow. Of course, there are other things that I don't have today that I also want. And I'm going to daven for that too. But not to the exclusion of those things that I, so to speak, already have. Those things that, well, I don't need to daven for it, I already have it. No, we're not supposed to look at it that way. We're supposed to look at it as everything I have is not necessarily guaranteed. And I daven Hashem in the morning at Shacharis. I daven Hashem, please give me food to eat. Give me a roof over my head. Give me clothing to wear. Give me all the things that I feel that I need. Even though I have it, but nothing is guaranteed. We're supposed to look at our affluence, at our wealth, the way that they had it in the Midbar. That is the best antidote to the threat of Kochi Va'otsem Yadi, my strength and the power of my hand gave me this wealth. Because that's what happens. If you don't actively fight against it, the natural tendency of a human being is to look around and say, this is mine. I did it. It's about me. And they push Hashem out of their lives. That's natural. That's not a person doesn't proactively do that in an evil way. It's the natural thing to do. If a person just leaves himself to his own devices, that's what's going to happen. A person has to actively fight against that and make clear in their own minds, this is from Hashem. Everything is from Hashem. Now, of course, the way that we have our daily lives, that we keep the Torah, we follow Halacha, then it's built in that we should remember these things, provided that we live a deliberate life. Davening sends that message, making brachos sends that message, and make a bracha before I eat, before I drink, that in itself is saying, thank you Hashem for giving me this food, thank you for giving me this drink. So if we are deliberate in the way we keep our Yiddishkeit, then we are going to be constantly remembering Hashem and constantly fighting against the tendency to push Him out of our lives. But therein lies the challenge. A person has to live deliberately, and that's always the hard part, to be thinking like that. But that the Torah here is telling us the formula. The formula is, remember the way Hashem took us through the wilderness, gave us everything we needed in really a wonderful way, but it was not money in the bank. It was daily, a daily giving from Hashem. That's the way it's supposed to, that's the way we're supposed to look at it. Pasuk Yotes, verse 19. Now, before we read Pasuk Yotes, I want to take us back so we can get the context. Go back two pages to page 980. The very beginning of Parashas Ekev started with the Pasuk at the top of the page, Yud Beis 12. V'haya Ekev Tishmeun, it says the reward for listening. Esa Mishpatim Ha'ele, to these laws. And you'll guard them, you'll do them. Then what will happen? Then Hashem will guard for you the covenant and the kindness that He swore to your ancestors. And it goes on to say all the good things that will happen if we listen to the Torah. And we were just warned that there is a potential pitfall in all this goodness, which is the tendency to become arrogant because we have everything. Beginning of the parasha, which was one side of a coin, if we listen. So we were waiting for it to flip. When is it going to talk about the other side of the coin? And what if we, chas v'shalom, don't listen? That is inserted right over here. It's only going to be two psukim, two verses of what happens if we don't listen. This is not one of the cases of the Torah where it goes through an entire litany of bad things that would happen, chas v'shalom, if we don't listen. Just two psukim. Pasuk Yotes, verse 19. It will be if you forget Hashem your God, and you go after other gods, and you will serve them, you'll bow down to them. I am testifying against you today that you will be destroyed. Just like the nations that Hashem is destroying from before you. Kain tove dun, so you will be destroyed. Now notice this next word. Ekev lo sishmeun, on account of that you didn't listen, b'kol Hashem Elokechem, to the voice of Hashem your God. So here you have Ekev, not to listen. two pages ago, in the beginning of the parasha, was Ekev Tishmeun, on account of your listening to Hashem. That's why this parasha is called Parashas Ekev. And here it's on account of not listening. This is the flip side of the beginning of the parasha. Now, in Perek Tes, chapter 9, Moshe Rabbeinu goes back to the theme of affluence. Although now we're going to approach it a little differently, meaning that we're going to show here a subtle nuance in this issue of becoming arrogant due to affluence. Shema Yisrael, listen Yisrael. Ato ver hayom es hayarden, you are crossing today the Jordan River. Lavo lareshes goyim, to go and to conquer nations gidolim va'atzumim mimeka, that are bigger and stronger than you are. Arim gidolos uvitzuros bashamayim, cities that are large and fortified in the heavens, meaning gigantic cities, tall, powerful walls, powerful armies. That's what you're going to conquer. Am gadol varam b'nei anakim, a nation that is large, powerful, the sons of giants. Asher ata yadata ve'ata shamata, that you know and you have heard. Mi yisyat seiv lifnei b'nei anak, who can stand before the children of giants? How is that possible? V'yadato hayom, you should know today. Ki Hashem Elokecha hu ha'over lefanecha esh ochla. Hashem your God, He is the one who is going to pass before you. He is a consuming fire. Hu yashmideim v'hu yachniyem lefanecha. He will destroy them. He will humble them from before you. V'horashtem v'havadetem maher. V'horashtem v'havadetem maher. You will conquer them. You will destroy them quickly. Kasher diber Hashem loch, like Hashem spoke to you. So you're about to enter Eretz Yisrael. You see now, let's characterize this, let's put this in the context of what we were speaking about until now. Right now, you're about to enter Eretz Yisrael, you see yourselves as needy. You don't see yourselves as affluent. What are you needy for? Because these nations are much bigger than you are. These cities are fortified and powerful. You don't have the physical strength to defeat them. You know you don't have the physical strength to defeat them. Right now, you're feeling impoverished, not in terms of money, but in terms of strength, in terms of weaponry, in terms of an army. You feel impoverished. So right now, you see yourselves as needy. Therefore, you turn to Hashem. That's what we said. We said when a person feels a lack and a need, they tend to turn to Hashem. So right now, as you are about to enter Eretz Yisrael, the risk of arrogance at this moment is not very great. Because at this moment, you feel needy. You feel a lack. You feel that there's danger ahead. After all, that's what happened with the Meraglim, with the spies. They scared everybody that we were not going to be able to conquer Eretz Yisrael. You feel that fear. So therefore, you are focused on Hashem. And don't worry, Hashem is going to destroy those nations. But look at the next pasuk Dalet, verse 4. Al tomar bilvavcha, do not say in your heart, Bahadof Hashem Elokecha osam milafanecha lemor, when Hashem pushes them away from you, do not say as follows, Bitzit kasi heviani Hashem, it was with my righteousness that Hashem brought me, lareshes es haaretz hazos, to conquer this land. Uverishas hagoyim o'ela, and with the evil of these nations, Hashem orisham mipanecha, Hashem is conquering them from before you. This is a frommer approach to arrogance. What was the arrogance before? The arrogance before was pushing Hashem completely out. I am the source of my wealth. I am the source of my power. Kochi va'otzem yadi, I made this. Who needs Hashem? That was the arrogance we spoke about before. This is a frommer type of arrogance. This is, no, Hashem did it. It's all from Hashem. I know it's from Hashem. Hashem, I couldn't have possibly defeated these armies before me, these cities. There's no way I could have done it. It's all from Hashem. It's not from me. But you know why Hashem did it? Because of me. because I'm such a special person, because I'm so righteous, because I deserve it. I'm entitled to it. And these nations that Hashem is destroying from before me, they're evil. So they deserve to be wiped out, because they're evil, and I am righteous, so I deserve Hashem's bracha. So this is a different type of arrogance. I would say it's not necessarily as bad as the first one, because at least this is acknowledging Hashem. Hashem is the one destroying the nations from before me. But it's attributing Hashem's actions to my or our righteousness, our piety. So we have a warning. Do not say that. Don't think that. This is a warning from Moshe Rabbeinu. It's a lav. Do not believe that your success that Hashem is giving you is because we deserve it, because we're righteous. Don't believe that. Rather, says the Torah, Pasukei, verse 5, Lo vitzit kasecha uv'yosher levavcha atavala reshes es artsam. This is not because of your righteousness and because of your pious heart. Hashem, you are coming to conquer their land. Rather, ki berishas hagoyim o'ela Hashem Elokecha morisha mipanecha. Rather, it is because of the evil of the nations that Hashem is conquering them from before you. So that part is correct. But why are you getting it? I understand they're getting destroyed because of their evil. That's true. There always has to be two sides to the coin. We may deserve something, which is why we're getting something, but why are they losing? Because they're evil. So the formula that we're warned against is don't say we're gaining because we deserve it, and they're losing because they deserve it. The second part is true. They are losing because they deserve it. But why are we gaining? So rather, uleman hakimes hadavar ashen yishba Hashem lavosecha, and it is in order to establish the word that Hashem swore to your ancestors, leAbraham, leYitzchak, uleYaakov. You're riding on the coattails of your ancestors. Don't believe for a moment that this is coming because of your piety and your righteousness. Rather, it is because you are the beneficiaries of the children of your ancestors of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Now, why is this important that we not believe it's because of our righteousness? Now, the first point the Torah is going to make is because we're not that righteous. That's the first point. As Moshe Rabbeinu says now, Pasuk Vav, verse 6. V'yadata, you should know. Ki lo vitzit kascha Hashem Elokecha nosen lecha es haaretz hatova hazos l'rishta, that Hashem your God is giving you this good land to conquer it. Ki am kishe oref ata, for you are a stubborn people. You are a stiff-necked people. You, meaning, now stiff-necked can be a criticism. It can also be a compliment. You can be stiff-necked and not give in to evil, but a person can also be stiff-necked and not listen to Hashem. Here it's being used in the negative, that we are a stiff-necked people. And as Moshe Rabbeinu says, Zichor al tishkach, remember, don't forget, Eis asher iktsavta as Hashem Elokecha bamidbar, that which you angered Hashem, your God, in the wilderness, l'min hayom asher yatzasa meretz Mitzrayim, from the day that you left Egypt, ad bo'achem ad hamakom hazeh, until you came to this place, mamrim hayisemim Hashem, you have been rebellious towards Hashem. It's you can't attribute the conquering of Eretz Yisrael to our collective righteousness, because collectively we weren't that righteous. Now the implication here would be that if in fact we were righteous, then we could attribute it to ourselves. Meaning, let's say it was actually Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov who were getting the land. We're saying the reason why we're getting the land is because we come from Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. They're the ones who, so to speak, earned the land. Okay. So we can't claim that it's for us, and we shouldn't claim it's because of us. It's also a form of arrogance to say that it's because we're so righteous. Fine. But they could have theoretically claimed that because it is for them. It would be true. If Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov would have been standing there right now with Moshe Rabbeinu. And they would actually be physically alive and conquering the land. They could have said, it's because of our righteousness. And they would be correct. So it sounds like the Torah is saying that it's okay to attribute the success to your own righteousness if you know that you're righteous. If that's true. But the fact is, the Jewish people can't claim that because we didn't behave so well in the wilderness. That's what it seems at this point. Now let's hold that thought. Because this is enough so far for Moshe Rabbeinu to tell the Jews, don't attribute it to your own righteousness because you weren't so righteous. But we still have to address the point, what about if they were actually righteous? It sounds like that would be okay. Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov themselves could have claimed it's for us. So we're going to get back to that, but let's hold off for a second. So Moshe Rabbeinu now goes on to show some of the things that we did. And this is where he is going to recap the story of the Egel HaZahav of the Golden Calf, which was the first really horrific sin that we did nationally, as a people. As a people, collectively, the very first horrific sin that we ever did was the Golden Calf. It's true that other sins had been committed before then. We have the brothers selling Yosef and things like that. But as a nation, we weren't a nation yet at that time. After becoming a nation, and even though, of course, there were some sins that were done in Egypt, but collectively, the most horrific, the Golden Calf was the first really terrible national sin that we did. And Pasuk Ches, verse 8, Uvechorev hiktzavtem es Hashem, in Chorev, which is Har Sinai, you angered Hashem, vayisanav Hashem bachem lahashmid eschem, and Hashem became angry with you to destroy you. He was actually going to wipe you out, because you deserved to be killed. Ba'alosi ha'hara, when I went up to the mountain, v'kachas luchos ha'avanim luchos ha'bris, to take the stone tablets, the tablets of the covenant, ashakaras Hashem imachem, that Hashem had cut the covenant with you, v'ayishev bahar, and I dwelled on the nation, on the mountain, arba'im yom v'arba'im laila, 40 days and 40 nights, lechem lo achalti umayim lo shasisi, I did not eat bread, I did not drink water, I didn't need to, I was angelic, I was considered like one of the angels. I had no need for food or drink. It was a special time that I was getting the Torah from Hashem. At that time, you, Jews, deserved that your leader, me, that I would be able to be on that mountain and be as an angel. That was because that's what you, Jews, deserved at that time. Vayitein Hashem Eli es shnei luchos ha'avonim, Kisuvim ve'etzpah Elokim, and Hashem gave me the two stone tablets written with the hand of God, the finger of God. Va'aleihem k'chol ha'devarim asher dibar Hashem amachem bahar mitoch ha'esh v'yom ha'kohol, and on those tablets were like all the words that Hashem had spoken to you on the mountain from within the fire on the day of the gathering, meaning when we heard the Ten Commandments, the Aser Sadibros, those were written on the tablets. So here we are, Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, I'm there. It's 40 days since Matan Torah, since the Aseres HaDibros. You were on such a high level to the point that Hashem was cutting a covenant with you and giving you stone tablets that were, so to speak, going to solidify this bond between yourselves and Hashem. I, as your leader representing you, was given an angelic status. I didn't have to eat or drink. This was the level you were on. And what happened? Yud Aleph 11. Vayihi miketz arboim yom v'arboim laila, was after 40 days and 40 nights. Nasan Hashem Eli es shnei luchos avanim luchos abris. Hashem gave me those two stone tablets, the tablets of the covenant. Vayomer Hashem Eli, Hashem said to me, kumreid maher mizeh, get up and go down quickly from this. Ki shiches amcha asher otzeisam mitzrayim, for your nation has become, what's the word they use over here? Has destroyed, has become corrupt?
Yeah.
Corrupt. Okay. That you took out of Mitzrayim. Saru maher min aderech asher tzivisim. They turned quickly from the path that I commanded them. Asu lahem masecha. They made for them a graven image. they made for them a golden calf. And as a result of that, Vayomer Hashem Elai, Leimor Hashem said to me, saying, Ro'isi es hamazeh, v'nei am keshe orefu, I've seen this nation, I say that they are a stiff-necked people, heref mi meni v'ash mi deim, so turn away from me, and I will destroy them, v'em che'es shemam mitachas ha-shamayim, I will blot out their names from under the heavens. How do you like that phrase? I will blot out their names. Like we say about Amalek, that we should be mocha them. We say about terribly evil people, Yemach Shemam, their names should be blotted out. Hashem here threatened to do that to us, that we should be blotted out from under the heavens. And I will make you a stronger and greater nation than they are. Now Moshe Rabbeinu leaves out the next part, which is that he davened for us and prevented us from being killed. But that part is not important to what the point he's trying to make over here. The point he's trying to make over here is, don't think you're so righteous. You committed the golden calf. You can't claim to be such a righteous, pious nation if you did that. So don't think you're getting Eretz Yisrael because you're so righteous. You shouldn't be here. You should have been wiped out. Va'ifen, I turned. Va'ireid min ha'har, I went down from the mountain. Va'har bo'er bo'esh, the mountain was burning in fire. U'shnei luchos habris al shtei yadai, and the two stone tablets were on my hands. Va'ira, and I saw, v'inechat ha'sem la'Hashem elokeichem, you sinned to Hashem your God, asisem lochem ego ma'aseicha, you made for yourselves this calf that was made out of metal. Sartem maher min ha'derech ha'shetziva Hashem eschem, you turned quickly from the path that Hashem had commanded you. Vo'espos bishnei luchos, and I grabbed the two tablets. Vo'ashlichem me'al shetei yodai, and I threw them from upon my hands. Vo'ashabreim le'inechem, and I broke them in front of your eyes. I smashed those tablets to show you that you no longer deserve them. You're no longer on the level you were on. You are not that righteous. And then I appealed to Hashem like the first time. In other words, I supplicated Hashem just like the first time. 40 days and 40 nights. Meaning, just as the first time, 40 days and 40 nights, I was up there and I was getting the Torah, and it was a wonderful 40 days and 40 nights. Here, it was crying out to Hashem. Lechem lo achalti, umayim lo shasisi. I did not eat, I did not drink. Not because I was on such a high level and you were on such a high level, but now it was out of anguish, out of grief, that you were going to be destroyed. Al kol chataschem asher chatasem, on all the evil that you did, all the sins that you did, lasos hara b'nei Hashem la'achiso, to do evil in the eyes of Hashem, to anger Him. Obviously, a person can't live if they don't eat or drink for 40 days and 40 nights. So Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu the ability not to eat or drink again. But this time, it was not because the Jews were on such a high level that they deserved that Moshe Rabbeinu be like an angel. This was out of grief and out of fear that Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't eat or drink. Hashem sustained him and did not let him die. Kiyogorti, for I was terrified, because of the anger, Ashakatsaf Hashem aleichem lashmid aschem, that Hashem was angry with you to destroy you. Vayishma Hashem elai gam bapamahi, and Hashem listened to me also at that time and did not destroy you. So again, don't get it into your heads that the land is being given to you because you're so righteous. Uva Aaron, Hisanaf Hashem ma'od la'ashmido, and in Aaron Hashem also became very angry to destroy him. Vo'es palel gam ba'ad Aaron bo'esahi, and I davened also for Aaron at that time. Aaron deserved to be wiped out as well. Chazal tell us that Hashem was going to kill all four sons of Aaron at that time. But Moshe Rabbeinu davened and spared two of the four sons of Aaron. Eventually Nadav and Avihu were also killed, but Elazar and Isamar lived. And your sin that you made the calf, lakachti, I took it, v'esrof oso ba'ish, and I burned it in fire, v'ekos oso tachon heitev, and I smashed it up, I ground it up very, very well, Adasher dak leafar till it was as thin as dust. And I threw its dust into the river that came down from the mountain. The Gemara discusses whether it's an appropriate method to get rid of Avodah Zarah, to grind it up into a dust and scatter it. This sounds like that's the way you get rid of it, but the Gemara says it's no proof, because really what he did over here is as was described in Parashas Kisisa, is he took the dust and mixed it with the water and gave them to drink, like a sota. And those who had sinned with the golden calf, but there were no witnesses, they blew up. Just like a sota blows up in the case of infidelity. So here, that's what he did with the ground up, dust of the golden calf. And Moshe Rabbeinu puts in a few more things that we did wrong. Uvisaveira, uvimasa, uvikivrosa tava, matzifim hayisem es Hashem in taveira, in masa, and kivrosa tava, you also angered Hashem. Taveira and kivros hatava are mentioned in Parshas Bahaloscha. Those are the situations where we complained and Hashem punished us, and Masa is where we complained about the water. I want to show you each of those things just so you have context for them. So we'll go back for that in a moment. I just want to read a little further and we'll go back to look at those three things just for the context. But before that, Pasuk Chav Gimel, verse 23, Uvishloach Hashem Eschem Mikadesh Barnea Lamor, and also the spies. When Hashem sent you from Kadesh Barnea, saying, Alu Urishu Es Haaretz, go up and conquer the land, Asher Nasati Lachem, that I've given to you, Vatamru Es Pi Hashem Elokechem, you rebelled against the word of Hashem your God, Velo Ha'emantem Lo, you didn't trust him, Velo Shematem Bekolu, you didn't listen to him, you rejected the land. Mamrim ha'yisem im Hashem, you have been rebellious against Hashem, biyom dati eschem, from the time that I have known you. You have always been rebellious towards Hashem. So let's hold the place here on page 988. Let's just take a look. So everybody, I don't want to dwell on this. I just want to make sure everybody understands these three things, the three places listed, which are Taveira, Masa, and Kivros HaTa'ava. So if you turn to Parshas Bahaloscha, two of the three are right next to each other in Bahaloscha. That's going to be on page 786. In bottom of 786, Perek Yudal, chapter 11, starts. This is when we left Har Sinai. So it says, "Vayiam kimis onanim rabi oznei Hashem." The people were complaining, and it was evil in the eyes of Hashem. Vayishma Hashem, vayichar apo Hashem heard and became angry. Vativ arbam eish Hashem, the fire of Hashem burned in them. Vatochal biktzei amachane, and it consumed in the edge of the camp. Vayitzak ha'amel Moshe, the nation cried out to Moshe, vayispalel Moshe al Hashem, Moshe davidu Hashem vatishka ha'esh, and the fire was extinguished. Vayikra shem ha'malkom ahu tav'eira, and he called the name of that place tav'eira. So there's the first one, tav'eira. Why was it called tav'eira? Ki va'ara va'mesh Hashem, for the fire of Hashem burned in them. So that is the first place mentioned, Taveira. Then the next story goes right into the first time that Hashem, the second time Hashem brought the slav. This is where they were complaining about not having any meat, and Hashem brought the quail, and they ate it, and they died as they were eating the quail. They ate it for 30 days, a very, very unfortunate incident. And that's the whole next story over here. And if you turn the page to page 790, actually, we're going to turn even further than that. We're going to turn, this is one long story here. But if you turn to page 794, after the whole story with they desired the quail and they ate the meat and then they died eating the meat, So Pasuk Lamed Dalet, verse 34, Vayikraes Shema Makomahu Kivros Hata'ava. They call that place the graves of the desire. Kisham Kavru Esha'ava Misavim, because there they buried the nation that was desirous. So that's Kivros Hata'ava. That was the third place mentioned over here. The three places mentioned were Tav Eira, Masa, and Kivros Hata'ava. So Tav Eira and Kivros Hata'ava, we're here in Parashas Bahaloscha. What about Masa? So Masa goes back further to Parashas Bishalach, when we first left Egypt, and after the sea was split, before the first war with Amalek, we complained about water. So, when we complained about the water, so that's the first time that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu to get water out of the rock. He told him to hit the rock, and Moshe correctly, appropriately, hit the rock in that case, and water came out. But on page 390, after the incident with the water, right before Amalek attacks us, in Pasuk Zayin, verse 7, it says, Vayikra Shem HaMakom Masa Umeriva. And they call the name of that place Masa Umeriva. Masa comes from the word test, to test Hashem, and Meriva comes from the word fighting or arguing. Al Riv B'nei Yisrael, about the fight or argument of the Jewish people, Ve'al Naso Sam Es Hashem Lemor, and that they tested Hashem, saying, Hayesh Hashem B'kirbeinu Imayin, is Hashem in our midst or not? So that's Masa. That's the other place mentioned over here in Parashas Ekev. So we have Tav Eira, Masa, and Kivros Hata'ava, referring to various places that we were rebellious against Hashem. Going back to where we are in Parashas Ekev, on page 988. So that brings us to Pasuk Chof Hei, verse 25. And Moshe Rabbeinu is criticizing us, showing us our that we were not so righteous, and we did not behave so well. And now he's going to talk about the result of the Egel, or that his davening to save us from, he's going to tell us the text of his davening to save us from being destroyed. Now, I want to reiterate what the loose end that we have, because we are actually going to stop here before his prayer, because his prayer is very, very important. But I want to reiterate the loose end that we have, because it's going to tie into what we're going to read here with his prayer. So what's the loose end that we have? Moshe Rabbeinu says to the people, don't say that the reason why you're getting the land, they're losing it because they were evil. You're getting it because you're righteous. It's true, they're losing it because they're evil, but you're not getting it because you're righteous, because you're not that righteous. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying. But the implication is that if you would be that righteous, then you could say that. It would be all right. You could say, they're losing it because they're evil. We're getting it because we're righteous. Who do we know for a fact is righteous enough to get the land? Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. How do we know that? Because Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, you're only getting the land because of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So we know that Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were righteous enough to get the land. So they could theoretically, if they were alive at that time, they could have said, we deserve it. We're entitled because we're righteous. They should lose it because they're evil. We deserve it because we're righteous. That would have been, it seems, an appropriate thing for Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov to say. So it doesn't really empower us, because who's going to argue that they're so righteous? Right? Who can say, I am so righteous, I deserve? But it sounds like, in theory, one could say that if one really knew that they were so righteous. So we're going to challenge that assertion as we read further. But we're going to show why. I mean, so we have to show why we're able to challenge that. But we are going to challenge that as we move along over here. So what we're up to is Moshe Rabbeinu's text of his tefillah, which he did not include before, in saving the Jewish people from being destroyed from the golden calf. And as we go through the text, we'll understand this issue of feeling entitled because we're righteous. Can a person feel entitled because they're righteous? That's what we're going to see next.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.